10, 15.
Back upfield to the 35, to the 40, 45, 50.
Pass the 50.
35, 40.
Pass the 30.
To the 20.
Inside the 20.
You got to be kidding me.
To the 10.
Whoa! He scores!
He's all the way home.
The no flags!
Oh, my God. Holy moly.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
One of the greatest upsets in sports history.
Hello again, everyone. This is the Old College Try. This is your host, Tim Hyland, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mike Unger. Mike, it's late August. It's hot as hell. It hasn't rained here in approximately 17 months. My lawn looks terrible. But hey, Premier League started a few weeks ago, and in T-minus, well, it started over the weekend, but for me, it starts for real. College football is back in a big way in just 2 days, Mike, and here we are again.
And Tim, first of all, it is raining currently as we record this here in Baltimore on Tuesday, so my lawn, of which I don't have any, will be thriving. My pepper plants will be good. Premier League has been awesome, by the way. Arsenal, the only unbeaten, untied team in the league. But that's all the non-football talk we'll have because the season is finally upon us. Just 2 days, about 48 hours till the Penn State Nittany Lions. I know many of our listeners love them. We'll be kicking off against Purdue. Controversial that they're on the road starting the Big Ten season again. Controversial according to James Franklin, at least. But yes, I can't wait for college football. And I did get to watch a fair amount on Saturday. I don't know if you did, but it was great being back.
So we can't spend too much time on it because there's so much to discuss. This podcast could probably be 4 hours long. But I know, look, as I think if you're a college football fan, there's a part of you that is just a history nerd. Because so much of the allure of the sport is the lore and the history and the traditions, all this kind of stuff. So you just had a wonderful trip with your family over to England and to France. And I know you had the opportunity, and it sounds like you were really like touched by like your experience at Normandy. I'm just curious what that was like.
It was incredible. I'll try and make this as quick as possible. First of all, when it comes to lifestyle, I can just say that here in America, we're doing it wrong.
Yeah, we are.
Compared to how they live in Europe, we're doing it wrong. I'll just leave it at that. Yeah, we spent all day touring Utah Beach, Omaha Beach, the American Cemetery, other historical spots in Normandy, and it was incredible because so many of the places look maybe not exactly like they did in 1944, but very, very similar. So you can close your eyes and visualize, you know, the troops slogging through the water onto the beach. There are still German bunkers that original German bunkers that are there. The pillboxes where they had the guns, they're there. You can see huge craters where Allied bombs fell onto the ground there in France. So that was amazing. And then 2 days later, we went to, drove 3 hours south to Brittany, to a town where my girlfriend Allison's grandfather was shot down in 1942 by the Germans. He parachuted out of the plane, and out of a crew of only 10, he was the only one who wasn't killed or captured.
Wow.
And he basically spent a month and a half in a couple of these small towns in the region of Saint-Nazaire, hidden by members of the French resistance. And he ultimately was able to escape over the Pyrenees Mountains through Spain. And there's a plaque to him in the center of town. And we were greeted like celebrities by a couple of these of the townspeople who have taken it upon themselves to mark the occasion of him escaping and to basically keep his memory alive. They're very proud of their town's role in saving him, and they're forever indebted to the Americans. And it was just an incredible experience. They had us into their home for dinner. We had a meeting with the mayor in the town hall. They had a wine and cheese reception planned for us with the mayor. So it was an incredible experience.
I mean, just seeing it, first of all, if you didn't have any personal connection to it, must have been wonderful. But wow, for to have that actual personal connection, incredible.
Yeah, it was truly amazing.
God, I've read so much about that war. I could read everything that's written about it.
I'm slightly obsessed with it right now. I'm going to rewatch Band of Brothers. I'm reading Ambrose's book D-Day. I'm reading another book about an American spy in France in the war. So it's kind of an obsession. I feel it's a Tim level obsession for me.
Last plug here. My dad will appreciate this. I cannot recommend more highly the 3-part series that author Ian W. Toll wrote about the Pacific Naval War. It is unbelievably readable. Hmm. He's a real historian, perhaps the favorite history I've ever read. And I read the Winston Churchill bio by Manchester. It is incredible, Mike. It's
absolutely— Wow. All right. I'll slot that in for 2023.
All right, here we go, Mike. So here we are back in college football season. We heard a bit about your off season. We have to start here, and this is a jarring transition from, you know, global calamity that was World War II. Put yourself in your shoes. We started this podcast, I think, 11 years ago now, Mike.
Has it been that long? It seems like 12.
Imagine if you and I transport ourselves back in time to that first show, when you had a super awkward intro, you didn't know what to say. Said, hey, by the way, in 11 years, USC and UCLA are going to join the Big Ten.
That would have been a mic drop. I mean, I still can't fathom it, because the Big Ten, even though it's called the Big Ten, it is Midwest to its core. And obviously there's nothing, and I mean nothing, Midwest about Los Angeles. And the fact that USC for so many years was in the Rose Bowl playing the Big Ten champion, and it used to be an important game. And of all, I'm trying to be an open-minded fan. And look, things change. We're getting old. Old people don't like change. These are all facts. So I'm trying to just, you know, sit back and enjoy the games and understand that things are going to change. But I do miss the importance of the Rose Bowl. And to think that USC could be representing the Big Ten in the Rose Bowl, it's mind-boggling to me.
So I'm trying. I've talked to so many people who, understandably, they see what's happening with whatever NIL on the transfer portal and this ridiculous and they have a very negative and pessimistic viewpoint of college football going forward. I'm not the most positive thinker. but I actually think, like, look, the sport has changed so many times in so many titanic ways over its 100 plus year history. It'll be fine. It's always been fine. There's enough interest there that, like, that's ultimately there'll be money. So it'll be fine. Right. But to your point, yeah, like, it doesn't really make any sense that UCLA and USC are joining the Big Ten. It's comical in a lot of ways.
It's comical.
I mean, look, as a Penn State fan, is it cool to think, like, having a yearly game against UC? Like, yeah, that's fun. Okay. Like, I get it. But yeah, I lament the end of the Rose Bowl. It was like the greatest bowl tradition in college football. There's nothing, or there has been nothing, like 5 p.m. on January 1, that first shot of the Rose Bowl, right? That is just iconic in a way that, like, few things in sports on. I put it right there, like, with the Masters, or a really great World Series. It's just like something that's like, wow, this is really important, right?
And that's it's woven into the American fabric.
Probably going away. Only thing that really bothers me about it is, and this is based on, so I'm no longer working there, but as you know, I've spent 8 years working at Lehigh, which is a Division I athletics program, FCS in football, wherever it's called now, right? But I got to work quite extensively with the athletics program, and I saw how much the travel just for the kids in the non-big sports, like the softball team or the soccer team or the lacrosse team, just between essentially, I guess it's DC and Boston. And these kids are playing in their season, like, 2 games a week. So you have one on the weekend and one on the road. And sometimes you're on a bus for like 6 hours or whatever. And then you're on a bus the way back or whatever. I saw that grind for them just in a 6-hour bus trip perimeter, right? Mm-hmm. Did anyone give any consideration to the UCLA softball team, which is a wonderful program?
No,
right?
The answer is no.
Flying to Piscataway?
No one did give it any, because it had nothing to do with it. It only had to do with two things, football and money. Right. That's it. So I completely agree with you. It's preposterous for the other sports. and the other quote student athletes. And that's why I think eventually there are going to be other West Coast schools in the Big Ten.
It is inevitable. There's been so much talk about, it's, you know, the obvious candidates to me would be Oregon and Washington. Okay. But if you're talking, I guess, like super committed TV markets, there's been a lot of buzz about Utah because everyone there will like, Salt Lake City's a decent sized market and they'll tune in.
Yeah.
As opposed to Portland, where they probably don't care that much about Oregon football. Right?
Yeah, same thing with San Francisco. I mean, it's a huge market, but are people watching Cal and Stanford? I don't think so.
The other thing that bothers, this is the last thing negative I'll say. The other thing that bothers me about this whole thing is, look, we have had, and I say it's a privilege that we've been able to travel this country and see all these places that we've seen. Okay? And you've been to other places I've not been. I've been places you've not been, including places that you would say are like lower level in the big scheme of things. But, you know, if not for the Illinois of the world or the Oregon States of the world or the Wake Forests of the world, we don't have this whole thing called college football, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, it's very cynical. I like Joel Klatt a lot as a commentator during games. Mm-hmm. Great job. In the immediate aftermath of this UCLA-USC thing, there was a lot of guys like him who work for, let's say, the network responsible for either this or what's happening in the SEC, who were like just saying like, hey, this will be great for college football. And here's why it's like not bad. And it's like, dude, like we have been to Oregon State. Yeah, you got to be committed to make a trip to Oregon State. And it's not a program that's ever going to win a national championship, probably, right? But we were there. Those fans cared about Oregon State football. Mm-hmm. And to like leave them behind like they don't matter, again, does not sit right with me.
Yeah, no, I agree. The part of the charm of college football is that there are so many games and so many teams, and they're contracting. It seems like we're going through a period of contraction where they're almost going to be creating another division. You know, it's going to be maybe 24 Big Ten teams, 24 SEC teams, and then almost like a de facto, you know, 1AA, and everyone will be kind of moving down a division. I think what's going to be interesting is how the structure of the new college football playoff. I just hope that they allow an avenue for some of these other conferences to get into the college football playoff. And I hope that the Big Ten and the SEC don't just kind of take their ball and go play on their own field.
Yeah. So again, there's definitely like, you're either in this thing or you're not in this thing. And if you're not in this thing, your future is
bleak.
Right. And I will say, you do wonder, like, look, this is dog eat dog. This is cutthroat. Okay. Loyalty's out the window clearly, but the loyalty for now has been, the loyalty that's been out the window is, okay, we've been partners in this conference forever, but we're going to leave because it's better for us, right? This has been floated several times by people like I respect, and like you can like actually see this happening. What if it gets to the point where it's like, yeah, we've been in this conference together forever, but you're no longer useful, and like, see ya, you're out.
Oh, kicking people out?
Yep.
Considering how you started this podcast, you know, could we have imagined UCLA and USC in the Big Ten 10 years ago? Of course we couldn't. It's hard to imagine them kicking conferences out now. But 10 years from now, would I be surprised if the SEC, you know, said, Vanderbilt, you're gone? Now, they keep these schools around, the Vanderbilts, the Stanfords, the Northwesterns, because they like to prattle on about their academic prowess, which I've never quite understood.
Right.
But I agree with you. Would anything shock me in the world of college football? Not much. And it wouldn't if we started seeing some schools being kicked out. It's more TV money if you divide it among fewer schools.
Ugh, what a mess. Anyway, all right. Trying to be positive now. I got to say this, like, because like the guy did, he got murdered in the press and on social media when he started this job in the most unfortunate of circumstances. Kevin Warren, commissioner of the Big Ten, starts his job and then COVID hits. Yeah. Global pandemic. And he made some decisions that were not that popular. And I get why people were upset or whatever. I'll just share from my own personal experience. going through that as someone who worked at a university, I remember very vividly having a conversation with our president. And he was like, look, Tim, like, you know, most times when you're a university president, you have a really difficult problem. There's someone in the country who's faced the same problem. You can pick the phone and call them for counsel. Mm. Like in this case, there was no one to call. Yeah. Like, and I was hearing one thing from the CDC and one thing from the state, and one thing from the, like, so he's like, we were left impossible situation. And I think Kevin Warren like was in the same thing. It's like, you're hearing all this different stuff. Of course, if someone's in your ear saying that, hey, young men are susceptible to this heart condition if they get COVID, you have to take that seriously. Mm-hmm. Okay. And he didn't go well, whatever. He had a very rough start to it. Fast forward to where we are now. How about a $7 billion media rights deal that has reset the bar for what everything's going to be going forward? And let's face it, it is now the Big Ten and the SEC and everyone else.
Yeah. What a coup on that media deal to have, you know, we went from a world where there was really one big game for many of the previous decade, the 3:30 kind of SEC game on CBS, right? That was a slot. And now the Big Ten has each network, three different networks putting their best game is going to be a Big Ten game. You got Fox at noon, CBS at 3:30, and then NBC at night. That is a real coup for the Big Ten. That's been fantastic. They have three basically appointment time slots on three different networks moving forward on Saturday. And can I add, thank God, there were rumors that NBC wanted to put a game on Sunday night.
Oh, yeah.
Sunday, that's when I might check out of college football if there's college football played on Sunday.
It's allowable only on Thanksgiving weekend, perhaps, and Labor Day weekend, right?
Yes, Labor Day weekend, absolutely, it's allowable because you have Monday off, but that's it.
But yeah, I mean, like, again, to your point, that structure of this deal with the three different networks and the outlets is a very NFL style deal.
Mm-hmm.
You're not tied to one provider.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it is. Looking at it from a fan's perspective, I think it's great. You know, first of all, they're all over the air networks, and I think we take that for granted because we've had cable or streaming services for so long, but there are still people who don't have cable in cities like Baltimore. And I always think it's kind of sad. Like if you're a poor kid in Baltimore, you don't have cable, you can't watch these games. I'm glad that they can now.
Agreed. All right. This must be addressed to in a very quick fashion. Look, we all understand the sport is changing in so many ways and many different ways. We now live in an era where players are essentially being paid. NIL is a thing. Okay. The transfer portal, kids can basically pick up and go anywhere. People, I don't think, really understand the implications of the roster turnover from year to year is like nothing we've ever seen before.
Yeah.
So take any preseason prediction with a grain of salt, because as someone who used to vote in preseason ranking things, like you do it almost entirely based on what happened the year before, right? But when you're seeing in some cases up to 50% roster turnover, what happened last year is irrelevant. Irrelevant.
Yeah.
All that being said, I'm not worried about the quote unquote paying players thing. And here's why, Mike. I think we all got a chuckle. You may have seen it. I'm sure you did. About the freshman in Nebraska, first name DeColdis. I think his last name's Crawford.
Yeah.
Who got like the NIL deal with like the HVAC company.
The air conditioning group.
That's brilliant, yeah. Right? Now, do I think DeColdis is making like tons of money off that? No. Okay. And there's also the issue down at A&M where Saban's accusing Jimbo of like buying this all-star lineup. Here's my thing. The market always corrects itself. There's not an endless number of guys. I don't care how rich or how committed to their favorite football team. They're going to pour money into unproven freshmen when those kids, half of which, three quarters, don't turn out. The mm-hmm. money will only be there in the end for the biggest stars. I do not foresee NIL being something where all of a sudden the quote-unquote poor programs can't compete because people aren't going to give their money. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're not going to do this. They're not.
Well, I think it's interesting, and I've read takes on both sides. about whether all this NIL money is going to result in the more dominant teams, you know, sustaining their domination, or whether it possibly will be leave an opening for some of these have-nots to get in the game. I mean, if T-Bone, look at T-Bone Pickens, you know, at Oklahoma State, he's no longer with us, but, you know, what if he were around? What if, I almost think it's going to take a couple seasons to see how it all pans out, but I agree with you. These are, you know, most people are going to want to see some kind of return on their investment. And by the way, we've already seen people in non-revenue sports getting some of these deals. And again, you're right. They're not going to get rich off of it, but it's nice that they can, you know, have a job and get some walking around money. You know, if these athletes in the niche sports who have large social media followings, if they can make a couple hundred or $1,000 a month or something, I say I'm all for it. I don't think there are a lot of people rushing to make declarations on how NIL is going to change college football, but it's so new. I don't think anyone will know for at least, you know, 3 to 5 years.
Right. Again, there's a lot of like, bloviating and this is the end of the world or whatever. It's really not. And, not to like play that same old line again, but let's be honest. Payers have been played since the inception of this game. Okay.
Yeah.
That's just the reality of it.
And if you want to be, if you're an end of the world type of person, there are many, many, many other places you can look in this world where I would agree with you other than college football and NIL.
I can't imagine what you speak of, Mike. Things seem great.
We're sailing right along. I want to be back in France, drinking wine and eating cheese and looking at a beach.
Last question, unfair question, I know. But at the highest level, what do you think college football looks like in 10 years?
I think, you know, you're going to see the Big Ten and the SEC, as they're doing now, continue to expand and continue to separate from one another, or from the rest of the conferences, pardon me. It makes sense to me that they'll have 20 to 24 teams each, essentially, from coast to coast. It'd be interesting to see if the SEC, you know, starts to creep northward. It's tough to see who they would want other than Notre Dame right now, but it's hard to predict, as we said, 10 years in the future. For me, the interesting part is, what is the college football playoff going to look like? How many teams will be in it? Will it be 8? Will it be 12? Will it be even more than 12? Why not 16? Could be 16. You know, you and I started out this podcast, we were vehemently against any type of playoff. And I still think there's an argument to be made again that the game was better before a playoff, but we've come to accept it. I think we like the 4 teams right now. So again, I'm just taking this. We love college football, so I'm going to attempt to watch the games, drink my beer, eat my smoked meats, travel, tailgate with my friends, and enjoy college football in whatever shape or form it's in. But I think that's what we're heading toward. You know, what will the media deals look like in 10 years? Probably everything will be streaming. I wouldn't be surprised if we go in that direction, but that's what I see, 48 to 50 team, 2 super conferences.
Yeah. There will be programs, fans that are going to be negatively affected by this. There's no question about that. I put it kind of in the context of what's happening with golf right now. I mean, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. I do find what's happening, while troubling, also somewhat fascinating. I mean, yeah. What, Smith left today, right? Cam Smith.
Yeah, the number 2 player in the world, by far the biggest coup, like talent-wise, maybe not with name-wise, but biggest coup talent-wise.
And I think I saw Max Homa talk about, and I think Homa's staying, but like, he's like, look, at the end of the day, like, this is an entertainment product, okay? And so is college football. It exists because people enjoy it. And I do think whatever form it takes, we will all continue to enjoy it.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Aren't I being positive, Mike?
Very positive. You're very positive once the red light comes on. People could hear our pre-show conversation. They'd see the real Tim.
Everything's fine. All right, we can review. Oh, God. Where to start? Northwestern 31, Nebraska 28. let's be honest here. It's not working for Scott Frost.
Well, first of all, I mean, that's an understatement. I watched the whole game, and it was a fascinating game because Nebraska looked great to begin with Casey Thompson as their new quarterback. Their offense was humming along. Scott Frost's decision to kick that onside kick up by 11 points in the second half when his team had all the momentum, there's no way around it. That was a boneheaded coaching move. There was no need to do that. And it completely backfired and completely turned all the momentum against the Huskers. After that, they had their classic Nebraska deer in the headlight look in their eyes where you knew they were just going to find a way to lose that game. By the way, noted listener Scott Tozier and his lovely girlfriend Lisa were at this game at Aviva Stadium in Dublin. They had a spectacular time. I don't know if you heard this story where the credit card machines in the stadium went down and the vendors there simply started giving the beer out for free. Is that something that would happen in America, Tim? No, it's not. Another check for Ireland. There was actually a couple news stories that I saw online with pictures of the mob scene of people lining up for the free beer. And Scott and his compatriots were in that mob scene somewhere. But I don't see how Scott Frost is. How are you going to bounce back from losing to Northwestern? Nebraska won one Big Ten game last year and it was over Northwestern and they annihilated them. I just don't see. I mean, they're a team with no confidence. This thing could get ugly quickly. I mean, or they could circle the wagons and rally around him. But that's a horrible, horrible loss for the Huskers.
I think, too, I've said this a million times, and I'm sorry to say it again, but I believe it to be true. I think college football in so many ways is a confidence game. Mm-hmm. And if kids lose confidence, they can't play. I think Scott Frost finds himself in the same place where he's trying things he wouldn't usually try. He's questioning himself, right? And you can't, as a head coach of a major college program, be in that headspace.
Yeah. Right?
Aaron and I on Friday watched the Manti Te'o doc on Netflix. Have you seen it, Mike?
I have seen it, yeah.
Same thing happened to him, right? This horrible thing. Didn't your heart break for the poor kid? Like, what?
Yes. I mean, I think it was, first of all, it was told pretty much from his perspective. It was a good documentary. I did feel bad for him. There's no reason for what happened to him to happen to him. But there was one key question that was unanswered in that documentary is, why did he never stop the narrative that got out? I mean, he really, really kind of went with it for a long period of time. I understand he was scared. I understand maybe he didn't know what to do, but he did not make any effort to correct the record. That's all I'll say. But there was no reason for him to be targeted and attacked like that. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, but I bring it up because he basically said, like, he goes to the pros. This thing happened to him. His confidence was shot. He couldn't play.
Yeah.
Couldn't play. And I think Scott Frost is in a similar headspace, but it's going to be a rough year in Nebraska.
Oh, God. And Pat Fitzgerald, though, let's tip our cap to him. What happens after Northwestern has a bad year? They come right back. And Northwestern, their quarterback, the transfer from South Carolina, looked great. And they have this running back, Hull, who looked very good. And it was an impressive win by the Wildcats, definitely. And I read a story where the local Irish fans were pulling for Northwestern because – they like Pat Fitzgerald, his Irish lineage.
Very quickly, no need to comment here, Mike. Florida State played a meaningless game against Duquesne for some reason. 47-7 win for Florida State. Congrats, guys. Illinois 38, Wyoming 6. A nice start for Illinois. Your boys play them next week, right?
Yes. I'm very upset that Illinois gets to have a game before this showdown with Indiana. I think that's extremely unfair that if you're going to open – with a conference game that one team can play a game before that game. And it's the opener for the Hoosiers. That's a big advantage for Illinois, in my opinion.
I agree. Utah State 31, UConn 20. I wanted to mention this. So UConn, as we all know, in a pretty sad state of affairs, like, God knows there's no future for UConn football. They're aimless, right? Got lost in the shuffle of conference realignments years ago. but actually started this game, they were competing against a good Utah State team. A good Utah State team, right?
Yeah, the defending Mountain West champs, Utah State. And I have to give credit, Jim Mora, coach, you know, debuting as coach of UConn. Always loved him as a guest on the late, great Mark Packer show.
Yes.
That mysteriously and for absolutely no reason got canceled. We used to love that show. And he was Jim Mora was always a very good and entertaining guest. He usually did the interviews while hiking in the mountains out in California, certainly not the mountains of Connecticut. But that's a heartening result, I think, for the Huskies in week zero against a good Utah State team.
Yes, and congrats, Jim Mora. Like, you're in a good, tough spot there. I want to say this, like, the poor quarterback for UConn, Taquan Roberson, whose first real college action came last year for a 5-0 Penn State team who was having a great game at Iowa. And John Cliff gets hurt, and this poor kid who had never played a meaningful snap has to walk into this game at perhaps the last atmosphere you would want your first action in the Big Ten to be in. The tide of the game had turned. He's in Iowa City. There are rabid fans there. And the poor kid just looked completely out of his depth.
I remember that. I felt bad for him there as well.
So he transfers out for obvious reasons, and he wins a starting job. And then your first game, you suffer. I think you tore ACL. He's out for the year. Yeah. Like,
that sucks. I feel terrible for him as well.
Rough college career for Taquan. And finally, Vandy 63, Hawaii 10. You wonder why Hawaii's still playing football at this point.
Timmy Chang is going to bring them back. Yeah, the new coach for Hawaii, their legendary former quarterback. I watched a fair amount of the first half of this game because I had jet lag when I returned home. And, God, it's so sunny in Hawaii. They were playing at some, like, temporary stadium. I think they're renovating Aloha Stadium. So they're playing in, like, a 9,000-seat stadium, something like that. It was such a beautiful stadium. And Vandy looked great. They have this new quarterback, Wright, I believe is his name, who looked outstanding. Of course, Hawaii is in rebuilding mode after Todd Graham wrecked the once proud franchise. But you're asking me what will college football look like in 10 years? Hawaii will still be covering midnight kickoff starts against favored teams coming over from the mainland. I do predict that. Give Hawaii a couple more years.
I could be wrong. I'm pretty sure I heard on our beloved Sirius XM college football, I agree with you. Why they canceled Mark Packer's show is mind blowing to me when they've put these two, like, milquetoast nobodies in his spot. But
milquetoast nobody. That sounds like something Jim Mora Sr. would say.
I'm pretty sure I heard that anyone on the mainland will not have any broadcast access to Hawaii late games this year.
What?
It's only available via either Hawaii broadcast networks or streaming services.
I don't know if I believe that. I mean, I watched the first game but I guess that started at 10:30. That the first game, the one I watched, was on CBS Sports Network.
I'm almost positive their game this week is not on any television.
Huh. It's hard to believe in the year 2022.
Yes. All right, Mike, I'm going to skip the top 25 because at this point, who cares?
Yeah, I agree with that.
And we'll just real quick. Predictions for the conferences, okay? And some of these are easy, including the first.
You think?
Mike, what are your thoughts on the Big Ten this year? Any guesses?
I think you got to go with the Buckeyes.
They really have. The Plain Dealer, by the way, in Cleveland has done a two-part series on how Ohio State basically doubled down on recruiting to become the kings of the North. It's a really good series. A lot of it goes back to, like, you know, Urban and what he did and what he saw coming from Florida, where he knew the players were and where he had to go and get them and basically made them what they are. They are just, they're so far. And I know Michigan beat them last year, but as a program, let's be honest. Right. Is there any comparison between?
No. And Ohio State's going to have a chip on their shoulder this year. Michigan lost, of course, a lot of key players. They don't know who their quarterback's going to be. And Ohio State has superstars at every position. And they have Oklahoma State's defensive coordinator coming in who did outstanding job with the Cowboys last year and expected to do the same with Ohio State this year. So I'm going with Ohio State. I'm out on a limb there.
That was a great hire, by the way. Great hire. All right, up next, a little trickier, SEC, Mike.
You got to go Bama, Timmy. You know, they won it last year. I think people forget that, but the last memory will be, of course, them losing the national championship game. Georgia lost so much on defense, and it's just so hard to repeat that I think Bama will win the SEC.
I do as well, and I'll talk about why a little bit later. the ACC, Mike.
Clemson. I think that Clemson, by the way, Clemson has the nation's longest win streak at 6 games. I heard that the other day, and I was pretty shocked by that, but it makes sense because Georgia lost to Alabama in the SEC title game. So I think it's going to be Clemson. I think Dabo will have them focused. It's kind of a redemption season for Clemson. So Tigers.
I would lean Clemson, but I would not be shocked at all if it was anybody else.
Anybody else? You wouldn't be shocked if it was Wake Forest or Boston College or Duke?
Not those, but like almost anyone in the middle. Because again, like there's the roster turnover. Like it's hard to even follow who's gone where.
It is. And especially a quarterback. It seems like almost every team other than your top, you know, 4 or 5 teams has a transfer at quarterback. Because right now, if you're a quarterback and you lose your job, you're not going to stay there. You're going somewhere where you can play. I mean, NC State with Devin Leary supposedly has a very good team this year, and they're kind of thought of as a dark horse in the ACC.
I think I heard, isn't Caton Slovis at Pitt now? The USC?
Yeah, he'll be starting on Thursday in the backyard brawl for the Panthers from USC. I mean,
that's a big deal.
Yeah, very big deal. And we saw what they did with Kenny Pickett last year. So Pitt should be good again.
Yeah, I agree. And I heard via Neuheisel, I've heard that Narduzzi, even losing the receiver, what's his name?
The one who went to USC.
Feels really good about his team.
Yeah.
Like the conference formerly known as the Pac-12. What do you think?
I guess they're going to keep that name for at least this season. Well, they still have 12 teams this season. I'm going to go a little off the rails here on this one. I'm going to go with USC. You know, everyone's looking at Utah, and Utah is certainly an impressive program. Love what they did last year against Oregon and the way they played in the Rose Bowl against Ohio State. But I think, you know, it's a different beast when everybody is gunning for you and they have all this national exposure and expectations on them. And I just think that Lincoln Riley with Caleb Williams is a dangerous, dangerous combination. I think there's some way that the Trojans are going to get it done.
I mean, I like the energy that Riley will bring. So I kind of agree with you, Mike.
Yeah. All
right. Interesting year at USC. Finally, the always enigmatic Big 12.
Yes, and previous seasons, it would be easy just to pencil in Oklahoma. I don't think that it's going to be the Sooners' year with the transition to Venables. They lost a lot of players on both sides of the ball. They'll be good, of course. Baylor won it last year, right? In an outstanding game. It could be Texas's year. Could be Texas. Could be Oklahoma State. I'll go with Texas.
I will emphatically say it's not Texas. No way. It's one of the more fun conferences. You really don't know. I agree with you.
Like, yeah, it's completely wide open.
Oklahoma. You make it State for Oklahoma State for Baylor. I guess you can throw Texas in there. There's always Mike Iowa State. They're always there. Right,
they're always somewhere. They're always in the middle of there.
All right. So this is another open-ended question, and you can choose more than one thing. And I'll go first to kind of set the stage. So as I look ahead to this season, like what am I most the storylines I'm most interested in seeing unfold? I've got a few in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think number one on the list has to be how Georgia reacts to success, right? I think Nick Saban has said before, it's like really hard after you win it all.
Yeah.
To really want to get back to the work that got you to win it all, right?
Just human nature.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, look, Kirby's got a real coaching job in his hand this year, no question. I know how talented Georgia is. There's no question about it, right? But no sure thing you're going to like win another. It's really hard to win the national title in college football. How many has Saban won?
I think he has 7.
which is ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
It doesn't happen that way.
So number one is me watching Georgia this year, and they've got a pretty juicy week one game too. So get ready, Georgia. Two, I think Texas is a fascinating story. We've lamented for years why Texas, with all the resources and the talent down there, can't be better. I'm not seeing them make any you mock me, Mike, but I'm sorry. I used to say Texas is Pitt, but Pitt's better than Texas.
Well, they certainly were last year, and they certainly could be this year. Let me just say, I don't envy Texas's opening game against Alabama. That is going to be a challenge, to say the least.
Isn't that week two, right?
That's week two, right? Yeah, pardon me. But with everything I've read, you know, will this quarterback who transferred back home to Texas from Ohio State, is he the real deal? Have they been able to recruit more talent in the Sark era? I don't know. Texas is a team. It wouldn't surprise me if they went 10-2. It wouldn't surprise me if they went 5-7.
Agreed. We just mentioned Lincoln Riley and USC. On your last point, I'm in the same boat with Penn State. I know he just signed a 10-year deal. This is a huge year for him and Penn State. I can see them winning 10 games if they win on Thursday, which I think is no certain deal whatsoever.
That's a tricky opener.
I can see them going 6-6, 5-7. They've got spots of talent. They've got one of the best safeties in the country, Jair Brown. They've got some great linebackers, as always. They got a transfer wideout in from Western Kentucky who's phenomenal. Clifford is who he is. He was great before he got hurt last year. They got an outstanding freshman running back who's by all accounts doing great things in camp. But the one area you don't want questions is the offensive line, and they still have questions in the offensive line. I will say it's going to be fascinating in so many ways to watch Purdue Penn State on Thursday for this reason only. Well, two reasons. One, there's so much on the line for both teams. Two of the worst running teams in the country last year. Penn State 118th in the country in rushing, Purdue 123.
Wow, that's interesting. I wonder if Indiana's probably in between those two.
How do you game plan for that?
Yeah, that's a really interesting stat. I was watching game day on Saturday, and Kirk Herbstreit picked Penn State as his surprise team this year, so he's bullish on the Nits. You talk about confidence when we were talking about, you know, Scott Frost in Nebraska, and there were some games last year and the year before. It's been two very, very middling years for Penn State where you could see that the team just didn't have confidence they were going to win the game. I mean, you talk about the Illinois game. There are some other games you could point to. They just looked like they weren't playing with confidence. So Franklin's got to get that swagger back. I agree with you. It will be interesting to watch him.
So what are you looking forward to, Mike?
Couple things. One, I'll be selfish and I'll talk about the Maryland Terrapins. They finished on fire last year, 7-6, first winning season under Loxley, first winning season in 7 years. And they've got a lot of talent back on offense with Talia Tungavailoa, quarterback. They've got awesome receivers led by Rakeem Jarrett. And he's been really recruiting well, Coach Lox has, on the defensive side of the ball too. That I don't know if that'll translate to the field yet, but Maryland has a lot of upside potential this year. Number two is Clemson. People kind of forgot about them. Look at their losses last year. They lost to the ACC champs, Pitt. They lost to the national champs, Georgia. And I can't remember off the top of my head who their third loss was, but it was a close one-score game. And they really got things back on track and won 6 straight to end the year. You know, Dabo can coach. I think we know that. And it seems like they've been forgotten after just 1 year out of the spotlight. So I think it will be easy. It will be interesting to see how Clemson bounces back. I was going to say the same thing about USC and Lincoln Riley. I love the combo of him with Caleb Williams. Some of the things we saw Caleb Williams do on the field last year were incredible. And I think it would just be great for the sport if we have a thriving USC and a thriving West Coast football program out there. And the Pac-12 is just kind of interesting this year. New coach at Oregon, all this national pressure and the spotlight on Utah. I think the Pac-12 could be a fun conference to watch this year. So those are kind of the three things I'm most interested in eyeing.
Wonderful, wonderful season. Even though last year was I guess in reality, the first post, quote unquote, post-COVID season, I feel like this is the real one, because even last year there was still stuff, right? And I think we've very much gotten collectively to the point where it's like, we understand that COVID is now a thing we're living with, and let's go on and live our lives, right?
Yeah, and let's hope it doesn't impact the season.
No. So again, I think it's a fascinating season in so many ways, especially with so many things happening off the field that are fascinating. All right, Mike, let's preview this week to come. I have to move quickly here, Mike, because I have to leave here in 20 minutes to go coach soccer. Look, you can't say college football is not giving us a great week one. Let's start with West Virginia at Pitt, Thursday, 7, ESPN. Mike, can you tell me the year, the last time West Virginia and Pitt played in one of the great rivalries in college football? The last
backyard brawl, I'm going to take a stab in the dark and say it was 2015.
2011.
Wow, I didn't realize it'd been 11 seasons. Criminal, I am so happy that the backyard brawl is back. And what a cool first Thursday game to start at 7 p.m. at Pitt. Panthers, 7.5-point favorite. Seems a little large to me.
I mean, like, again, we don't know what these teams are until we're going to see them. And this is, we've said this a million times. College football just starts. You throw your kids out there.
Yeah.
Good luck.
There's no preseason. There's no nothing. It's game on right off the bat.
That'll be a great game. Same night, an hour later, Penn State at Purdue, Thursday, 8 p.m. on Fox. Purdue won 9 games last year. I think progress is being made with that program. A tough place to make progress, but a place that Joe Tiller proved you can win there at Purdue, right, with a strategy. And I feel like they're heading in the right direction there. I think it's a really tough opener.
No doubt.
I just think, like, on our old college try pick 'em, I picked Purdue to win this game.
Wow. Well, the Knits are 3.5-point road favorites. I've heard James Franklin complaining about the fact that Penn State has had to open on the road in the Big Ten. I think it's something like 4 of the last 6 years. This is a very tricky opener to go there on a Thursday night in West Lafayette. Who knows what the weather will be? Could be burning hot. Could probably be gray. Could be raining. it could be an ugly Big Ten football game. But it's going to be fun to watch for sure.
If there's a college football god, wouldn't it be amazing if, like, let's assume right now that West Lafayette is like here, 88 degrees and like stifling and annoyingly hot. But just for that one day, if college football god made it like 54 degrees and rainy, right?
that would be awesome. I don't think it would take an act of God to do that. There's probably a 50% chance that'll happen.
How about this one, Mike? Just for fun. You know, I love them. Temple at Duke, Friday, 7:30 on the ACC network.
Temple at Duke on a Friday. What are the ratings going to be for that one? Duke, 6.5-point favorites. Temple has been struggling since they had that run of real good coaches.
All right, Mike, my favorite game, over under in attendance. What do you think?
At Duke Temple?
Yep.
I'll go over under. I'm going to put it at 3,500.
I'll give them 21,000. 21,000.
I'm going way, way, way under 21,000.
And you know, I will be tuning in for that game.
Yes, and we will get back to you listeners next week on what the actual attendance was.
Illinois, Indiana, Friday, 8 p.m. on FS1, Mike.
Yeah, as I always already alluded to, I'm very nervous about this game. The fact that Illinois got to play a game last week while Indiana did not. Hoosiers, 2.5-point favorites for some reason that I really don't understand. We have our new quarterback, Connor Bozlak, I believe is pronounced his last name, the transfer from Missouri coming in. He was a 2-year starter in the SEC, so say what you will about that. But other than him, we don't have a lot of proven talent on either side of the ball, other than our great cornerback, Tywan Mullen. So we'll have to wait and see. Indiana, you know, they were the darlings of college football in 2020, and they really reverted last year, 2-10. No wins in the Big Ten. That's right, no Big Ten wins. So it would be outstanding if they could start the season with a Big Ten win over Illinois. And to say, which, you know, obviously it's a winnable game. If they lose this game, you're staring right back, right in the face of another 2-10 season.
Number 11, Oregon. Number 3, Georgia. 3:30 Saturday, ABC. What a great game. And hey, Georgia, I know you're good. I know you've got talent. But remember what Oregon did at Ohio Stadium last year.
Yeah, Oregon, of course, has a new coach, Dan Lanning, the former defensive coordinator for the Dogs, going against his old team. Georgia, a 16.5 point favorite. That's a big number, I think, for this game. What a great week one matchup. And kudos to Oregon for going all the way across the country to play the Dogs in that matchup. If they can somehow get the win, they could really be looking good for the college football playoff.
Number 23, Cincy, last year's darling, right? At number 19, Arkansas. It's a great game, too.
Yeah, excellent game. Hogs, 6.5 point favorites. Two teams that had outstanding 2021 seasons. I think, Tim, we love Arkansas, right? God, I can't wait to go to an Arkansas game. Will it be this year's, the destination for this year's Old College Try football trip, which after taking 2020 off, and really we had an asterisk trip in 2021 to the Lehigh Lafayette game, which was eminently enjoyable, but let's face it, that's not what the trip is all about. I am planning it this year, and so maybe it will be Fayetteville, Arkansas, because we know we want to go there for a long time.
I've been tempted myself to pick that for my years. The logistics of getting to there is so hard.
Yeah, it is. There are no direct Philadelphia or Baltimore to Fayetteville flights.
This one, fascinating for the culture class. Number 7, Utah, unranked Florida, 7 p.m. Saturday, ESPN. Mike.
Yeah, really interesting game. Again, Utah, they could have a dream season if they win this game, or they could get – I could see them going into the swamp and really not knowing what hit them and being limping out of there with a bad loss. Who knows? That could hurt their – confidence for the rest of the season, but that's going to be a really fun game to watch. Looks like Utah, 2.5 point favorites in the swamp.
Love that. Number 5, Notre Dame at number 2, Ohio State, 7:30 ABC. What a great game.
A great game. Ohio State, 17.5 point favorites. Would it shock you to see Ohio State? What would shock you more? Ohio State crushing them, that's no shock at all, or the game being close? I think I'd be more shocked if the game was close. I can't see Notre Dame winning.
I mean, Ohio State, they look so stacked.
Yeah, they have superstars everywhere on offense. And just, Notre Dame has a new coach.
They're going to score like 50 points a game. They are.
And Notre Dame has a new coach, and they have a quarterback, Buckner, who's going to be making his first college start in that environment Saturday night at the Horseshoe against that team. Oof, I would be tempted to lay the points with Ohio State. I'm going to lay off the game, but I would be tempted to lay those points.
And for the brave folks who want to stay up late, Boise State at Oregon State, 10:30 p.m. ESPN. Love the late game, Mike.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good matchup, too. We, of course, we're big fans of Oregon State here at the show. We loved our trip to Corvallis, and there's no better professional athlete than Oregon State's Adley Rutschman, who's doing wonders for the Orioles right now. Beavers, 2.5 point favorites over a Boise State team that's always spry, right? They're always going to play you hard. So that's a fun little game to end the weekend, or end the day. Pardon me, not end the weekend.
Our return to locks of the week. I had a horrible year last year, Mike.
You did. You were 6-9. And I finished 8-7. So winning season for me, and yet another losing season for you.
All right, Bobby, hit the bumper.
Place bets on college football.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't gamble. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
Mike Unger, 50-50, possible lot, probably loser of the week. Please hang up and try again.
Tim, for this week's Lock of the Week, we are going to that college football hotbed of Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts, home of the Boston College Eagles. They are hosting Rutgers. The Scarlet Knights with Greg Schiano come into BC. BC, a 7.5-point favorite. Just seemed like a high number to me for an opening matchup against a Big Ten team. So I'm going to take Rutgers plus the 7.5 points. And before you ask me, my confidence level is like a 2. I've done no research. I have no idea who's on either team. I'm taking Rutgers.
And again, the line for the Notre Dame game is what?
Ohio State 17.5-point favorites over the Irish.
It's a very fair line.
It is, because it makes you think, all right, we think Ohio State's going to roll, but that's a lot of points. So, yeah, it makes you think twice.
How about the Oregon-Georgia line again?
That is 7. I think that's 17.5 as well, or 17 as well. So, that's down to 16.5. Dogs by 16.5.
I'll take Oregon, Mike.
Yeah, I kind of like Oregon in that one. That's a lot of points for a team that really lost a lot of people. And the coach of Oregon knows Georgia inside and out.
Yeah. All right. Well, Mike, this was fun.
A lot of fun. Of course, it took some convincing me to come back for the podcast again. But yes, this week one was fun. I'm sure by week 8, I'll have regretted this decision to unretire. But yeah, this was a good one. And thanks to everyone who listens.
Everyone who listens, by the way, please do us a favor and rate us on Apple iTunes podcast. It's like the best way for us to get promotion. We have, I think, only 5-star reviews there right now, which is great. We could use some more. It bumps us up in their order of college from podcasts. Share with your friends. Mike and I do this with a complete understanding. There's no pot of gold at the end of the rainbow here.
I've done everything in my life with a complete understanding that there's no pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. But you just have to enjoy the ride.
We do it because we know we have a small but committed fan base who enjoys the show.
True.
It does make our trips more fun, too, that we do this kind of thing. So, whatever. Please promote the show. And everyone, sincerely, enjoy this wonderful weekend of college football. And, Mike, there's one thing to say.
We've waited 250 days to say pachas.
Pachas.
Thank you for listening to the TCFN podcast. For more college football news and wit, visit intelligentcollegefootball.com.